Hello and welcome to Reality TV. I am back this week. I have a renewed energy. It is March. Spring is on the horizon. We actually had a beautiful day in Chicago on Saturday, or was it Sunday? Doesn't matter. I might have been drinking a little bit too much wine with my mom this weekend, but you know, it's beautiful. We are going to be optimistic today. We're going to talk about Sister Wives, which was one of the best episodes in all of Sister Wives history. We're going to be talking about some 90 Day Fiancé. Why am I saying we? I will be talking about 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days, and of course, 60 days in. If you are looking for Married at First Sight or Love After Lockup, you're going to have to go look on Patreon this week. That's patreon.com/realitytvpod, because I'll be talking about those two shows, Married at First Sight, Love After Lockup, and I want to talk about a couple blind items, but also some business ideas that I have that I know I have no intention of actually following through on. But if you want to start a business, you want to be a hashtag boss babe entrepreneur, head on over there because I think I have some real winners for you. And also some personal stuff I'll update you there that, you know, I don't want to have the Clints and Tracys of the world knowing about. So head on over there. That's patreon.com/realitytvpod. And a huge thank you from all of us to Pam, Alyssa, Kelsey, Jen, Sarah, Janet, and Chelsea. God damn it, you guys really pulled through this week. You are keeping Reality TV public and free for everyone listening right now. So a huge bear hug from me and Asuelu. Thank you. Now, the reason I brought up Asuelu was because there was an Instagram photo, maybe on Twitter, wherever it was, Cody Brown and Robin, of course, Robin, ran into Kalani and Asuelu. Someone posted it and Asuelu is doing like his cute little, I don't know, hang 10 move, you know, with like your pinky and your thumb. And Cody is on the other side trying to bro out with him with a peace sign. Oh, so cringy. But that Asuelu, I tell you, I could take as many coconuts as he wants to pile on my back any day or anywhere, if you know what I'm saying, because seriously, Asuelu is the best. Now, what has been going on this week in the shallow end of the news? Well, this is real, real shallow. I just allowed my kids for the very first time to have our dog, my little Scout Bader Ginsburg, try to sleep upstairs in their rooms this past weekend. And I don't know how successful it was. Normally, we just have her go in her crate. She loves sleeping in her crate. It's nothing bad, right? Pet people. But they want to cuddle with her at night. I thought it was cute. It went okay. But things kind of took a turn when I decided that maybe, you know, the dog should sleep in our room or just find her way wherever she wanted to sleep. And this is so unlike me. I had a no dog in the bedroom rule until I had my sweet little baby angel puppy. And now she just wants to sleep with me. Please tell me if this is a problem or if it's something that I should not be doing. Because if she's in the bed, that means Dave doesn't have enough room, which means he has slept on the couch the past two nights. And I want to say I feel bad, but I mean, what can I do, right? So do I put the dog back in the crate? Do I make her go back in her crate after she's experienced the love and joy of cuddling me all night and let Dave come back and enjoy the love and whatever of cuddling me all night? Or do I let the dog? She's a puppy. She's only one. Dave's like 40-something. Don't you think she should have a chance? All right, let me know what you think. Like I said, that's very shallow, but it's very deep in my heart. All right, on TV this week, besides the shows that, of course, we're all watching, I'm going to need you to get a pen and paper or jot this down in your little notes section of your phone. Get caught up on these specials, these series, because we're going to be talking about them either here or on Bold Lip Happy Hour, which is going to get back up and running. Just with my dad being sick, things got thrown into a tizzy. But you can listen to the couple that we have done on Blonde Unfiltered with Jess. Go and check that out, Blonde Unfiltered. But I will be talking about in some way, shape, or form somewhere Narcos, which is on Netflix. Don't say, Jody, it's too violent, because I am the biggest wimp. I can't even watch the Scream movies, okay, those freak me out enough. But Narcos is really, really good. If you could watch subtitles watching Parasite or whatever, you can do Narcos. And all you have to do is just turn your head when it gets like shooty and killy and murderish. It's really very good. The nonfiction part of it will satisfy that documentary part of your heart that I know we all enjoy. Speaking of documentaries, McMillions. Get in on that on HBO. If you don't have HBO, ask a friend. Do the free previews. So far, we have parts 1 through 4. They debut every Monday. So actually, I'm recording this Monday, so there'll be a new one tonight. It's so fucking good. And it has twists and turns that you never expect to happen. As with, get ready for the next one, The Pharmacist. If I remember correctly, that one is on Netflix too. I kind of have a love-hate thing with this documentary series. I love it, love every single part of it. Hated that it just kind of ended. So if you're expecting a really good wrap-up story at the end of it, you're not going to get it, but it is definitely well worth watching. And it's not what you think it's going to be. I'll just say that. I don't want to give anything away. So Narcos, McMillions, The Pharmacist. I know I need to start watching the Gabriel Fernandez documentary series, but I have to really prepare myself for that one because that's going to be just a gut-wrenching one. You also need to go and find on Facebook, in your community, or just in general online, start looking for weird thrift store groups because I found a few that I am super addicted to. I'm lurking. I'm not an active participant. I might have posted which ones I am in the Baddest Apples Facebook group. It's the best kind of people watching. Next to the crazy mom groups that you can be a part of in your community, because there are some crazy bitches up in there. Go back to my Patreon episodes. I think I shared quite a few of them over there. So what is next here? Oh, of course, one more item of business, and then I'm going to jump into Sister Wives first, because I am dying to talk about this episode. Total Request Podcast. Last week, we talked about an episode of The Sopranos, and I could not have read the characters more incorrectly on that show. I will go to my grave saying that Carmilla was in love with a gay wallpaper salesman. It's a fact. This week, coming up on Total Request Podcast, is one you will all enjoy, and this show holds a very special place in my heart because it was one of the very first shows I recapped way back when I started this podcast in 2017. A little show called Meet the Putmans. Oh yeah, you remember that one? Well, we're going there this week. I am leading this episode. I can't wait to see what Amanda thinks of it, and I cannot wait to go do a little research because if you remember, one of the older adult sons got into some real deep trouble with firearms and the federal government, so it's going to be amazing. But not as amazing as this episode of Sister Wives. Holy shit. This Land Is Your Land or Hers is going to be an episode that absolutely, hands down, will go down as one of the most explosive and informative episodes of Sister Wives ever. Now, where do we start? Beginning of the episode, let's just obviously start right there. God, I'm clever. This pizza picnic lunch. Now, I'm no food expert, contrary to what my thighs and hips would lead you to believe, but I don't know if I would be choosing pizza on a windy day in the valley between mountains as a great idea for a picnic lunch. But of course, Cody does. I'd actually venture to say this is one of his worst ideas ever, worse than moving to Flagstaff, Arizona. I mean, who wants to sit down with their sister wives, or let's just say exactly what they are, their enemies. Who wants to sit down with their enemies and have them watch you shove carbs and melted cheese down your gullet? Now, let's talk about this move once again, because it's still somewhat of a mystery why Cody needed to flee Vegas so quickly, so abruptly. It wasn't because of the fantastic return on the cul-de-sac investment that Cody promised them to begin with. They didn't upgrade to any sort of home in Flagstaff, well, besides Robin, but that was a rental. She's got to move out. So the only thing I can think of, which becomes kind of an underlying important thing that never gets said in this episode, is that Robin's son, Dayton, was set to start college in Flagstaff that fall. Would that be why the entire family moved down there? Of course it fucking was. I mean, some people could argue the mass shooting in Vegas scared them, and of course it scared everyone. But I certainly think that Dayton was going to Northern Arizona State University, whatever college that is that's right there in Flagstaff, that had to be the reason why Robin was so quietly eager and willing to sell her house and go down there, because Dayton is not going to live in a dorm. He's living with them at home. So there we go, having that in the back of your mind, why they all went there in the first place and why Robin is not putting up so much of a fight. This all makes sense this episode, at least in my mind. But here we are, romantic picnic for five, and we learn not only does Robin need to move out of her rental, but so does Mary. Both of their homes have sold, so they have got to be out in, I believe, 6 weeks. And there are zero rentals in Flagstaff, not one thing on the market. I believe that is the case for Robin because, of course, I did a little snooping, and finding a four-bedroom rental is really tough. But for Mary, I don't understand what the big deal is. There were plenty of apartments and townhomes and homes that I looked up just now that had 2 to 3 bedrooms. Mary's one person, so a 2-bedroom should be more than enough room for her. She shills her ugly leggings from home, so I understand she needs an office. Use a bedroom for that, and then use the master bedroom for you and your banana. Done. Easy. But it's Mary, so she can't just have a 2-bedroom rental or a 3-bedroom rental. She's got to have the biggest and the best, so she also needs to find a 5-bedroom castle like Robin. Now, why is Robin so dead set against buying? I think we're going to see more of that next week, but I don't understand why she's so resistant to it. I can't believe I'm actually agreeing with Cody. If you were to build all the homes on Coyote Pass, plus Cody's little clubhouse that I do think is going to get built at some point, you're talking between bulldozing the land, making their pond, and building all the homes, what, 2 years? So if you buy a house, sell it in 2 years from now, or keep it and rent it out. It's likely that if they find a rental that will actually work for them, it'll either sell or they'll be moving again in a year. They're just going to be forever wasting money on renting and moving and the costs associated with moving again and again. So just buy some okay house for now. It might not be the modern mansion that she's in, but you just got to do what you have to do. I mean, none of these choices would be something that I would choose either. None of it makes good financial sense, right? But it's kind of the lesser of two bad choices. And I get that he broke his promise. He promised we were going to build. But listen, it's not even possible for him to fulfill his promise at this point. So what are you going to do? I guess we'll talk about that more next week, because that's going to be the focus of next week's episode. And it'll just give me more opportunity and more material to snark on Robin. So, what is Robin's solution to all of this pressing stress at the time? Let's just sit here, look around at the land, and dream. Let's pretend. Where do you want to build your house, Janelle? Christine, what about you? Mary? Well, here we go. Mary shrugs, plays with the grass a little bit, and says, Cody just told her where they all wanted to build, and then told her what was left back there in the trees. She didn't get a choice. She got what was left over. There was almost a brush fire because Cody got fired the fuck up, immediately gets pissed, and calls her out in front of all the wives and the cameras and us. And roll that beautiful bean footage. We get Mary saying on camera that she didn't want to live in the trees. We all heard it. But here we have Grumpy Dog saying she didn't get what she wanted. All the other wives got to put their input. Mary starts backtracking and says, that's not what I said, Cody. I didn't know. I said I didn't know where I wanted to live. You know what, guys? Oh, I have a really funny joke. I think I'll just go live in Parowan. Mary's a fucking psycho. She says it with a laugh because she really thinks that the other wives are stupid. But all of us, including Janelle, Christine, and Robin, see through her manipulative bullshit. Mary really thinks she's so clever and that her sister wives don't realize what she's saying, but they know her very well by now, and they know that she means exactly what she says. She probably will up and go to Parowan. Now, I don't know about you, but I thought it got kind of confusing when they started talking about properties, which one Mary and Robin did and didn't want. But at the end of the day, here's the important thing. Mary was pissed because Robin was getting picked last, and Robin knew it, and Robin vocalized that I'm getting the last of the pick. Mary doesn't like that because Mary has to be the one who says she got screwed and boo-hoo, poor me. Mary does want it both ways, just like Cody said. She wants to be able to get her way, but also cry victim. Now, the news here is that this is the first time in Sister Wives history that Cody has actually said it. To me, it felt like when Camille Grammer outed Taylor Armstrong on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. We all know it. We weren't going to say anything, but we said it. That's why Mary was so pissed off. Cody outed his true feelings, and the real story behind her LuLaRoe curtains is now in front of her and her Sister Wives, the crew, and the nation. We all know. Now, here is my confession. I think I'm going to throw in a little confession every week. I think last week I said someone was attractive, and now I don't even remember who because this is how quickly my brain and my imagination works. Here's this week's deep, dark confession. When Cody, Kodias, Kodathy, Brown started hopping on one foot and then the other, bashing Mary, saying he's been playing her game his whole life and he's fed up, I might have had very special feelings. Like, I might have climax. I might be willing to birth the final Brown baby, is what I'm trying to say. And I was just sitting there watching him hopping around, his curls looking better than they ever have, basking in the afterglow of a Mary takedown. Oh, God, it was so good. Here we come to Janelle and Christine, again, with all new information. Not only do they come clean that they're basically besties and have always gotten along, they share that Mary does not like their kids coming around and has never liked their kids coming around. This goes all the way back to the Lehigh house when they would have to cut through Mary's little apartment. Okay, picture a figure H, a letter H for those of you who didn't watch the show. Mary's house was the horizontal part of the H. Janelle had to get her kids from vertical H to the other part of the vertical H, and the quickest way would be to obviously cut through Mary's middle part of the house. But Mary didn't like that, so they had to trek their kids out their front doors, up and down concrete staircases. And again, there was babies at the time, and we're talking Utah, which I think gets cold. Not sure, because I know it's in the Southwest now, but whatever. Even though this is in the past, this is in the forefront of both Christine and Janelle, BFF Forever's, minds, because they're worried that if Mary gets the property, the one that was furthest from the road, Mary would have the pond on her property. And because she was such a dick about letting the kids cut through her house, they know that if the pond is on her property, Mary's going to get real pissy if the kids come around because she doesn't like noise. Or her celestial family, obviously. And God forbid something happens to Cody. You know Mary would make sure that that pond was all hers. She'd be filling it with catfish. Okay, if I had thought about that earlier, I probably could have made that more of a ba-dum-bum-ching. But seriously, if the catfish fits, well, so does the LuLaRoe. No idea. All right, moving on here. I just want to say I love the friendship between Christine and Janelle. We need more of those walks all season, every season. It's kind of like our chicken soup for the Sister Wives' soul. Now we have the four wives and Cody sitting down at Christine's house. And oh my God, I can't believe I'm admitting this, but Christine's rug, I was looking at that on Amazon, that very same rug, except not in the beige brown tone. I was looking in the gray white tones. Let me know if I'm allowed to buy it at this point because I'm really desperate for a new rug. Anyhow, we have all the wives and Cody sitting down, and Cody is riding high on life because he just talked to the attorneys, and the attorney said, if you were to build homes on that land and rent them out as rentals, you could make a killing. You could make a fortune just being landlords. So now he's thinking, maybe we just build some houses really quickly on that, rent them out, maybe go back to Utah, where I think, wasn't there just something announced that polygamy might be legal? Whatever, but not at that time. So all of them are looking at him as if he's insane. But I want to talk about Mary's very blatant, assholery. Her inability to ever say I'm sorry or admit fault for anything whatsoever is truly the DSM-5 confirmation of textbook narcissism. I mean, sure, Cody is misogynist. I'm obviously already overbearing his spawn already, but he's not wrong. Mary was the only one not willing to humble herself a little and work together to solve the problem that she herself created. She's sitting there, arms crossed, with no suggestions as to how to prevent another blow-up like the one she again created. Fuck off, Mary. If I were any one of them sitting there, or Cody, I would have just been like, you know what? Parawan is your best bet. You should go for it. Then you take that back corner with the trees and make a cool-as-fuck treehouse. They got plenty of people on TLC and HGTV that could build it for you. Let Mary go off, plant herself a banana tree, take over that park, and throw some catfish in the pond and name them Mary in her honor. Moving right along to 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days. Oh, Darcy is back and her face is more busted than ever. But let's talk about her risk-taking. She says she's a risk-taker in love, but I think she's a risk-taker in even getting dressed. I don't know anyone, even if they are 64 pounds soaking wet, that would trust lace to hold in any part of their body. But not only do we have Darcy, we have Stacy. Oh, I'm sorry, Stace, turning the corner. And I thought Darcy looked bad, but whoa. TLC, you gotta stop feeding the animals. Whatever these women did to their faces and their skin, especially those big old lips. The only thing I can compare it to, and immediately what I thought of when I saw Stacy's face sitting down sucking a milkshake, was her face looks like a vaginal birth. Her face is swollen, discolored, puffy, bloated lips. I'm just saying, I know what my undercarriage felt like after 4 vaginal births, and the pain is exactly what Stacy's lips make me feel now. You know what I'm saying, ladies. Now, I guess I should give you a little update on Darcy and Tom. She still thinks Tom is a dapper gentleman, but he made a big mistake. He was going to call her on her birthday. She was really looking forward to it because there's still a couple, you guys. As far as she knows, there's still a couple, but he never called. It's okay. It's only a birthday. Right, Darcy. You know Darcy is that chick who celebrates her birthday for 3 moons before the month of her actual birthday month. There's no doubt in my mind Darcy tore into a Trader Joe's and cleaned out all their 2-buck chuck that day because Tom didn't call, but it's okay. It's okay. All right, now let's see. Oh, I wrote something down about contouring. Oh, right, that Darcy used half of a contouring palette on a single phone call to Tom, which did not go well. Darcy pours herself a spot of tea or a cuppa while she Skypes Tom in a crop top, which was a bold choice. And although I'm ripping on Darcy, it's now Tom's turn because we knew for sure that Jesse was a sociopath. We weren't quite sure if Tom was just an asshole or a sociopath as well. He's definitely a different flavor of sociopath than Jesse was. You know, Tom's different because he knows exactly what he's doing to Darcy. And he doesn't give a fuck. Jesse was just plain fucking crazy. But Tom knows he's driving her to the brink and she's crumbling into pieces 24 hours a day. Ugh, I don't know. He's just as bad, if not worse, than Jesse was. Like, Jesse had the murdery kind of sociopath and Tom has the emotional torture kind of sociopath. Do you see the difference here? Okay, let's talk about Jeffrey very briefly because, whoa, I ended up doing some research and it did not take long to confirm that Jeffrey is indeed a Paul. Jeffrey destroys lives. He batters women. He has been accused of kidnapping. He's a horrible man, in my opinion, and should never, ever have even passed a basic casting phone call for this show or given a platform to appear like a decent man. He is not, but we're here for now. And as more comes out, I might boycott his segments just like I do with Angela's, but I'm talking about him today because we got to meet Varya, and turns out she might be just as annoying as the rest of the cast. Her DJ skills are very cringy, but maybe it's just a Russian thing. It's a cultural thing. You know, Russia's a little behind, and I actually want to say more, but I'm pretty sure Putin's probably tracking my ass already. So let's skip past my future incarceration in Russia and get to the good stuff. I'm talking about Varya meeting up with her friends. For the most part, her friends were fantastic. Very good friends looking out for her, making sure that she was not making a stupid decision, staying with a strange man in a big city all by herself. But there were two friends in particular that caught my eye, and I have a Tony from Sister Wives bubble in my throat. Wow, that's karma right there coming right back at me, and I deserve it because what I'm about to say may ruffle some feathers. Well, first of all, the one friend I need to know more about because she had on Delta Burke's designing women pantsuit from blazer shoulder pad to mid-ankle length pant. And the other one was a redhead. She had a lot to say, and I think she has a lot of DNA that we can share and talk about because I am certain she carries the little person gene. I am a big fan of little people. I've watched The Little Chocolatiers, The Little People Big World, hate their son and their daughter-in-law, but you guys know the whole story. I'm not saying this as snark material, really. I'm just saying it from a scientific point of view because as I'm fixing my glasses, I'm very scientific in my daily life and what I like to do. So I'm just saying she is a poster child for a carrier of the LP gene. Moving on before I get myself in trouble. At the end of the day, to be honest, I actually like Varya's friends more than I like Varya because they're calling their friend out for exactly what we see. She's using him to get to the States and he's using her to, who the fuck knows, satisfy his sadistic, sociopathic, allegedly personality. So let's cut to Varya, who is definitely going against the Russian propaganda in a pantsuit nation yellow getup like I have never been blinded by before. Ladies, when you want to turn a man on, don't you put on a bright yellow pair of slacks with a matching blazer? Yikes. The awkwardness was pretty off the charts, too. I think they were both expecting each other to be real sappy, falling all over the other. But instead, they were just standing there, waiting for the taxi man to come. And the real nail in the coffin that I don't think you can really recover from is when someone says, "Don't hold me like a father and or mother." Ugh. You just can't bounce back from that. Now let's talk about Avery and Ash. Oof. Well, Avery certainly did not like what I had to say on Instagram the other day. I think I said she came off as desperate and miserable. And that was only in regards to how Ash makes her feel as he is supposed to be a relationship counselor or coach. If she's that miserable, he's not doing his job. He's not good at what he's allegedly, supposedly doing. She didn't like that very much, but oh well, I guess get yourself a podcast and let us know what you think. So these two are FaceTiming, and I actually got Azin vibes from Ash. He's got a way, much like Azin did, to brush off any concerns that are brought up. You know, what about your ex? Oh, no, it's okay, it's fine. What about your son leaving Australia forever and leaving the only mother that he's ever known? Oh, yeah, she actually loves the idea. Just no worries, love, no worries at all. Right. You know, I have red flags alone in the fact that he's divorced and he fancies himself a relationship coach for only single women. If you were so successful in your relationships and you know what you did wrong, then why couldn't you fix it with the person you're with? I mean, I'm all for divorce. Well, that sounded bad. You know, some people are meant to be divorced and together or work through it or not. But if you're saying you're an expert in something, then be an expert in that. Okay, I sound like a complete asshole, but I am not a relationship coach. Now let's talk about Ed and Rosemary. God, Ed. God damn it, Ed. He's a real Renaissance man, which I did not expect at all. He's not only a photographer, stylist by night per Subway cold cut combo standards, and a father, and he's also an interior decorator. Whoa, color me mayonnaise shocked. I mean, considering he's the jack of all trades, you think he know a little bit about geography and how bribery works on the internet, which is why I think Ed is smarter than he lets on. I think he's playing the game wrong here. He said that he doesn't think Rosemary is playing him or that her family is playing him, but he's got to know there's an element of a shakedown happening. He knows Rosemary is trying to get to the U.S., but I don't think he cares. I think to have her with him for any amount of time is enough time for him. It's sad, and it doesn't make sense long-term to any of us or him, but I think Ed has been around enough millennials buying photo shoots to pick up on their YOLO, you only live once, and what's Vinny from Jersey Shore, let go, let God, the live in the now shit. I think he's actually starting to believe a little bit of that. And now let's talk about his colleague. Brains, beauty, a shitload of common sense. It's almost jarring to see such a normal human being on TLC. And same goes for the friend who looked like kind of a less buff, less someone, Asuelu. He's the one who showed up with the two-buck chuck. Probably the last bottle that Darcy didn't grab on her birthday bender. Which leads me to a question, a very uncomfortable question that I have for any gentleman listening. Probably the whole one and a half of you. I really want to know if guys do this. Do guys get together to show each other the lingerie they bought for their girlfriends just very casually? Come into my bedroom with those bottles of wine and let me show you my girlfriend's underwear. If this happens, I guess I don't want to know because I'm going to think men are even grosser than you guys. Some of you, very few of you are gross. Okay, let me just back this up. Speaking of Ed in particular, I want to continue liking Ed. How I like Larry, but he's making it really difficult at this point. At first, I was willing to forgive the creepy photos of women all over his house because he's a professional photographer, but now I'm not certain. In that bedroom with the friend, with the wine, with the lingerie, there were photos that got smaller and smaller and seemingly less professional. Like there were at least 27 to 34 3x5 and 4x6s on his closet doors, taped on his closet doors nearest his bed. You know any other professional photographers that have unframed photos taped on drywall and cinder block in their homes? No. As for the vasectomy, yes, of course you need to get one. And yes, you need to be honest with Rosemary. And yes, you should leave your frickin' lollipops at home because Jesus fucking Christ, what is he doing with a Costco-sized bag of dum-dums? They've got to be far more important than just handing them out to the kids there if it's taking up half your fucking luggage. What is he doing with the lollipops? Where are they going? Ooh, not like that. Well, maybe like that. Exactly. I think we can all understand why Tiffany's embarrassed of her dad's midlife crisis at this point. Moving right along to Pennsylvania with Lisa and Usman. Lisa is basically a fashion and beauty Instagrammer now. A little frosted white eyeshadow with a mauve frosted lip. Aussie French gray. Oh, you feeling the heat now? China Direct boutique jumpsuit and bam! You will be locking down a Nigerian prince in no time. Jealous? God, this has got disaster written all over it. It's Angela and Michael 2.0, but Lisa lacks even the smallest sense that Big Ange has. I mean, Lisa is really embracing a whole other generation, a whole other time, especially that high-low look, which is even more disturbing to me than the obvious scam that's going on. Every single item of clothing that she has a cape or an extended train. I hated that look when it was on trend for like 30 days in 2015, and I hate it even more now. It's the same shirt or romper or whatever the hell Chantel or maybe it was Sister Pedro. Remember what I'm talking about? It's got like a little Gone with the Wind fabulous spinny thing. You know the one. The style all the cheap boutique sites would have, like the super cheap fashions from China, and then they send them off to you with a 200% markup. They last one wash, and then you're kicking yourself. You didn't just go and buy yourself a Mosimo from Target. Which, by the way, side rant here, why are all the tops that are in Target right now cropped? Even fucking sweatshirts. I went in there looking for actually a tank top, but with thicker straps so, you know, I can hide my big boob girl straps. And nothing in there went past where my saggy boobs would hit, just above my belly button. Why is everything short? This is not cute. No woman actually feels good putting on half a shirt. It's gotta stop. If you're gonna give me a sweatshirt, give me the other half of it. Even if I have to zip it on, like freaking Paul's zip-on pants, that's fine. I'm not paying for a whole top that's actually half a top when it costs the same as a whole top. Bullshit. God damn it, Target. I am a Red Card member. Moving right along. All right, Lisa meets up with her friends. Well, at first, the little guy I thought looked like Mike Sorrentino, Mike the Situation, who has a new podcast, by the way. It's very good. Check it out. But I thought about it a little more. There was a little more kindness in the eyes. And then it hit me. I really hope you know this man because he is a legend. He's a Canadian legend. He goes by the name Mike Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S, Holmes on Holmes. He goes into these people's homes. He rebuilds it from top to bottom. He does it up to code. Like, he's really into code and making sure that contractors do the right thing. And he's got a big heart. I think one time he donated a lot of money. One time he teared up. It was really cute. I have a huge crush on Mike Holmes. Don't really like the Canadian accent sometimes, but I mean, you know, if he can flip a house, I'm sure he could flip me, baby. Oh yeah, that's right. So Mike is married to, or I'm calling him Mike, don't really know his name. He's married to Sally Jesse Raphael, who looks ravishing. I like the non-metallic red glasses. I think that bold matte look really makes her hair pop. And the height difference, I enjoyed it. See, I'm not anti-LP. I'm all about the mixing of heights and cultures, all about it. Anyhow, Lisa has some drama that she really needs to hash out with Mike and Sally, the Soulja Boy video. You know, guys, he wrote and produced and starred, directed, recorded, printed, copy, pasted the whole I Love You video, but a Nigerian woman was casted instead of using Lisa's photo. I mean, the least he could do was use her picture as a shadow or a silhouette or a ghost. Give Lisa a Meatloaf video where she haunts Usman into loving her, or give her nothing at all. Who in their right mind thinks showing up as a shadow or a ghost in a music video is a sign of love, Lisa? That's like wishing someone's dead. Actually, that's what I tell Dave what I'm going to do. Like, if I were to, God forbid, die and he marries someone much cuter than I am, of course I'm going to show up and haunt you. I'm going to be around the corner reminding you that I'm here. In other words, it's a threat. In Lisa's world, it's a threat for this video, but it's a threat out of love, so it doesn't matter. And sure, she might get beheaded in Nigeria, but it's going to be totally okay with her because she'll have died happy. I just wonder if she realizes it'll probably be at the hands of Angela. She's throwing an apology kick from Michael, throwing it like a missile across the country because Michael called her an elder again. But nevertheless, Lisa persists and she's off to Nigeria. Condoms be damned. Lisa is going to do her thing. No one can tell her different. She's leaving on a jet plane. God, I miss that song. That is a great song from the 80s. Maybe 70s? Whatever. All right, Yolanda. Ooh-wee, Yolanda. Between her accent that I could not identify and Williams, it was the messiest phone call. I did have to put on the little captioning on the bottom. They were working overtime, those people who typed those up, because, wow, it was as if Teresa Giudice had taken over Yolanda's body. She was saying daughter and airport. I could not pick up that she was even saying airport because there was like an extra U or R or W. I can't even begin to get the sounds together to say it. Airport, airport. I feel like I'm trying to pop my ears. Anyone else pick up on that? Let me know what accent that is, or maybe I pronounce airport wrong. I think Yolanda's daughter deserves a trophy because what she's putting up with, my God, her eyes rolled so far back in her head at one point. I thought she was stroking out. I mean, she knows this guy is full of shit. But you have to wonder, does she stick out her mom's craziness because she scores a free trip to London? Or, You know, does she break it to her mom that this guy's an asshole? And then you're just sitting here listening to your mom say airport, airport over and over again. I mean, what is a daughter to do? I am really hoping every single one of you is watching 60 Days In. This last episode was so good. I say that every single time. I know it's probably annoying, but I love this show. So far, to catch you up to date, we have four people that are out: Matt, Jacob, Alex, and Shanice. Let's catch up with Tony first. I think he is the best participant we've ever had. I'm a little nervous about going forward because they're putting doubt in our mind. Like, is he becoming too much of an inmate? Oh, chills up my spine. But as we meet up with him this episode, Tony's got a store going. He's selling to about 25 or 30 people, anything from ramen noodles to, of course, honey buns, duh. And anything in between, soups, whatever. Or maybe soup is the ramen. Ooh, there's a new debate. Anyhow, Tony is using his bunkie, that skinny dude, as a bookie. The problem is O'Shea, remember him? He's the one who got in the shank. O'Shea and some others are behind, so now Tony's got to collect. Shit's going to get real because he might need to beat people up. Tony knows that if he doesn't collect on what's owed to him, he's going to look like a failure. People are going to see him as weak, so he can't do that. Thankfully, most people willingly give him what is owed to him, but not, and I quote, the motherfucker in 14. Tony is going to get his ramen, goddammit, no matter what it takes. So he goes to 14's door and he starts demanding the guy give him all of his clothes. Like, take off your shirt, nope, your pants too, your socks, your shoes, your towel and blanket. I was scared. And obviously the guy was too, because later he asked to get transferred to PC, which means protective custody. I would have asked that at intake. I have no shame in that. I'm a huge wimp. I'm going to get beat up. I'm going to get killed. I'm going to get sliced from asshole to ear. Please put me in protective custody or even segregation. Is that what they call it? The shoe. I would take the shoe any day, every day, all day. Give me the shoe. All right, Dennis. He is still super cocky. He still thinks that he is pod boss, even more so than Tony, right? And he said he can find out how the drugs are getting in because he can trade the shank that he got for drugs, even though no one has ever offered him any drugs. He has no idea where they are, who's got them, but he will find out. He's confident about that. He knows that this guy named Megatron, this guy has got a mouth on the side of his face. It was like a Mr. Potato Head with the mouth displaced. It was crazy. But he knows Megatron can get him ice. Fast forward to the transaction. And Dennis and Megatron are standing there. They're about to hand off their goods. And two COs come and they start talking to the guys. What are you doing? And Dennis said they were playing a game. He lost a bet. He owes him something. So what do the two COs with two brains do? They let them go. Okay, sure. Go trade whatever it is that you're trading. Go finish playing your game. You funny, crazy, wacky criminals. What the fuck? What are their jobs to do then stop them from doing that kind of shit? I don't get it. So now Dennis has gotten a little nervous. He got a little shaken up. So they're going to go trade their shit downstairs. Well, Megatron is just out in the open like, hey, Dennis, over here. I'm handing you a package right now. And Dennis gets a little scared. So he's like, dude, we got to figure out how to do this without being so obvious. And then Megatron goes to some door, trades something off, and the guy flicks out a kite. You like how I knew that term? He flicks out the kite with ice in it. And then again, tries to go give it to Dennis. Dennis thinks he's being too obvious. So they walk away to do the transaction. Let's jump over to the ladies' pod. With Shanice finally gone, Ashley can relax a little bit, but not much because she's afraid her cover has been blown. She tells producers that she knows the inmates know she's with 60 Days In and that she's a cop, and obviously that makes it extremely dangerous for her in there. So they have to call in Gary Shirley's bio dad. Yes, Gary Shirley from Teen Mom. Don't care what his mom Carol says, even though a DNA test said it was Michael Jackson. Not kidding. Gary Shirley's dad's actual name is Michael Jackson. I'm certain that the DNA test was wrong. It was switched, and his dad is Chief Keith Peake. That's a mouthful right there, Chief Keith Peake. So, Peaky Blinders. Why haven't I been calling him that? Peaky Blinders says Ashley has got to go out of the program, so they pull her out immediately, and sure enough, the entire pod is convinced and high-fiving themselves that she was indeed in the show. I felt bad for Ashley because I sincerely think she wanted to stay those extra 8 or 9 days. She's a glutton for punishment. I would never do it, but I see her military background or her law enforcement background that she wants to complete the mission. But instead, she's got to be disappointed, didn't even eat her chocolate chip cookie because she thought she gained weight behind bars. Eat the damn cookie, girl. Now she's got to sit down with little peekers here and the sheriff and tell them what she's found out. Now, the main thing she did find out is how the drugs were getting snuck in, and it was in like the bra pockets. All right, I don't have many gentlemen listening, but women, you know what I'm saying. When you have a sports bra, they have the little pockets where you can put the padding or pull the padding out, and that's where they were shoving the drugs in. She finds out Miss Williams was fired after the many incidences, and I was very disappointed in their reaction to her complaints. I wanted to hear more. I don't care if it's personnel reasons and they can't share this and that. Yes, you can. I want to know what happened to Miss Williams. I want to know who fired her. I want to know if she saw the clips. I want to know if Peaks and Sheriff saw the clips. I demand action. All right, Jennifer freaks me the fuck out. I think Jennifer is the type of holy roller Christian, and I feel terrible even saying that, but she's the kind that kind of scares me. The kind that would probably throw stones at my home, like they take the Bible literally. And what concerns me the most is that she thinks she can pray Sierra, this girl that clearly has some mental issues, drug issues. She acts like she's possessed by something, but the thing she's possessed by is drugs and mental illness. But Jennifer thinks if I raise my hand and I pray hard enough, I can pray all of these things away for her. And I think that is so incredibly dangerous. Oh, Jennifer, come on. She's got next week to redeem herself, though. Thank you so much for joining me this week on Reality TV. Please subscribe, share, leave a 5-star review. If you want to check out Total Request Podcast, that's at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. My Patreon link is in the show notes. That's patreon.com/RealityTVPod. Everything you need is honestly in the show notes, so check that out. Hope you guys have a great week, and until next time, stay salty.